Mike, check.
Ryan, check.
Steven, check. Oh, I James checked myself.
Potato.
Potatoes.
Is Bill Belichick a person?
Yeah.
Bill Belichick. He's the coach of the Belichick. Patriots.
Okay, sure.
I don't know if he's.
I wouldn't know either. I just recognize the rhythm of the name.
You seem
the
so
rhythm of the name?
Yeah. This is the rhythm of
it's
the
it's in
name.
The rhythm of the name.
There's just a certain way of saying that.
Belichick. I hate you. I hate you all.
I really want to listen to that song now.
Minus.
It's in the rhythm of the name.
I'm going to give you all minus 2 points each.
Hello and welcome to FWAR, a.k.a. From Under a Rock, the podcast where we take each other out from under the proverbial rock on movies we think we all should have seen by now. We're doing a special cycle of our favorite movies, whether or not we've seen them or not. And this week, we watched Alien. But before we go into that discussion, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Steven Zurita.
I'm Michael Ornelas.
I'm James McAnally. Hi.
And I'm Ryan Evans.
So going into this, I had said I'd seen this movie. It turns out I'd only seen the last half of this movie, so I was half rocked. We're going to just go straight into the discussion. Michael, can you tell us a little bit about
this is
movie?
Michael's pick.
This was your pick.
Yeah, I've watched this movie, I think I said this last week, probably two or three times a year for the past 3 years. I saw it for the first time in summer of 2012, and I love it. It's a very good movie. It's very atmospheric, and I think that environment that it sets up is what I am drawn to so much by it.
Now, when you saw it in 2012, was that like part of a film screening, or were you just watching it at home?
No, Prometheus was coming out.
Oh, okay.
And I remember being like, I'm going to watch every Alien movie, and then I ended up lumping in the Predator movies because they're included AVP. in the AVP franchise. So, yeah, I ended up watching all... think like eight of those movies.
Crazy.
The Alien quadrilogy, the two Alien versus Predator.
And all the Predator movies.
And then the Predator, Predator 2, and Predators.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
Jesus. I haven't seen the Predator movies.
I haven't seen any of them either.
Yeah. I think I've seen like the end of the first one.
I don't think I've even...
They didn't grab me the way that Alien did. They're good, but they're more of an action movie than a horror movie, which,
right.
Interestingly enough, Aliens the sequel to this one kind of falls more in the action category than it does the horror category, and I'm a big fan of horror, so.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've heard this movie be called Jaws in Space. Is that like a good summary of the plot to you?
You just watched it. What do you think?
Oh, there's a lot of tourism on the Nostromo.
They got to close the space beaches.
We're going to need a bigger Nostromo.
The 4th of July is coming up. You know what that means. High concentrated tourism.
For real, though, did this kind of popularize the idea of the space trucker in film and cinema?
I suppose so.
I know it's...
it's not a glamorous job in this movie.
No, that's the thing. Whereas... a lot of mid-20th century sci-fi is about the glamour of space travel and how shiny and clean everything is. Where this is just, you know, there are a bunch of space truckers hauling their cargo across
the
galaxy.
The environments in the movie, the visuals, it's a disgusting place to be.
And we've had a lot more sci-fi follow that theme in the decades since then. I can think of, just off the top of my head, Firefly and StarCraft, the video game,
mm-hmm.
where the main character is a space trucker. Yeah.
The Terran, at least.
The Terran, sorry. That's what I'm saying, yeah. Jim Raynor?
Raynor. Yeah.
I haven't played him.
Nerdy shit.
Yeah, I haven't played him. I just... what is it, John Radner or something?
Josh Radner is
Pokemons
the guy from
Pokemons and all that.
Pokemons. It's definitely...
Minus one, James.
It's definitely a kind of visual style that started in Star Wars, where Star Wars was like, oh, these ships are used and stuff. The Millennium Falcon's a hunk of junk. But this takes it to a whole other level where it's like, you know what? A lot of these hallways and decks are just dark and the lights don't work, and there's random outgassing and coolant just leaking all over the yeah.
And why is there water raining down?
Yeah.
What does the engineer do?
Yeah. You know, I kind of on second or third or fourth thought, I don't know. it kind of makes a little more sense because that ship is not meant for people to be like. While it's in space, people aren't meant to be walking around it that much.
And landing on the planet, coming back.
They're supposed to be asleep the entire time.
Right.
And that's why the lighting is probably so terrible, and you have these leakages like off of a coolant system in the ceiling or something that they just don't even bother to fix or anything. There's just no point.
Yeah.
Because
they're basically in hibernation.
It's an industrial ship, and their priority is efficiency and speed and cost, and to work out kinks like that just wouldn't make sense from a business model standpoint.
Yeah, right. They definitely keep the clean areas of the ship restricted to where the crew are supposed to be, which is essentially the bridge, the dining area, the mm-hmm. sleeping pod room, and then the mother capsule, wherever the main computer is. I mean, those all look very sleek, but still not super... Mm-hmm. clean compared to the rest of, compared to the rest of the ship. I mean, the rest of the ship is really just like ladders and grates and tube hallways and sharp angles.
It looks like the bunker in Jurassic Park most of the time.
Yeah. You know,
I was surprised even Captain Dallas was allowed to take his coffee into the mother the brain room.
Oh yeah.
In one of the opening scenes. Yeah. He's
spills
all this,
all
shit.
All this expensive equipment all around him. And
you even see in the very opening when it's just like ambient shots of different
of space
interiors.
Or, interiors.
You see a control panel and there's a coffee mug on it.
Yeah. I thought that was so weird. Like you'd think in the future in space travel, you wouldn't be using ceramic coffee mugs.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're space truckers, I guess. So ceramic. It makes it more relatable.
There's something comforting about an old ceramic coffee mug on the long haul across the galaxy. You know,
I'm looking forward to the day when that is a commercial. Like when you're on the long haul across the galaxy,
Folgers.
is the brand to use.
The best part of waking.
For some reason, that guy starts singing this.
Folgers in your truck. In space.
In space.
In space.
we talked about the visual style, and you can't talk about visual style without mentioning H.R. Giger and
his active imagination.
Yeah, his active imagination. Michael, you brought it up with the question last week. It uses a lot of rape imagery and sexual imagery to make the audience feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's funny because like it totally works, and I didn't even realize it. Like, this is the first time I've watched the movie since read the article about that being an intentional device used visually.
Yeah.
Well, the first time I watched this movie was in high school, and I didn't even realize. You know, it just went right over my head. But you're right. I mean, there's a certain sort of unsettling nature about how everything's shaped and how everything's put on the set. Speaking of which, set design is crazy good in this movie. It's
I love
like
it.
Nuts.
I love it. Yeah. No, but like, I guess going back to the making you feel uncomfortable with rape imagery, it's not just the imagery. It's not just the design of like, you know, everything is either meant to resemble a vagina or a phallus or anything like that. It's the actual actions of, there is a lot of, for tact's sake, for being tactful's sake, I'm going to say there's a lot of unwelcomed penetration, and like everywhere. It's totally intentional. Like the face hugger being a huge one, but like even before that, when, what's that character? Is it Kane?
The first guy who dies, the chest burst.
Yeah, Kane.
Yeah, Kane.
When he is down, like rappelling, he's even like, there's a thin layer of mist and it's disturbed when you pass through it. I mean, that's even a way of just saying when I penetrate past this thing, it kind of stirs things up. Yeah.
For a second, I thought when you were saying for tax sake,
for tax
purposes, I would like to state that.
Yeah. I get a write off every time I review Alien.
Well, even the second mouth of the alien is a penetrative thing.
Oh, of the xenomorph?
Of the xenomorph.
Yeah. the adult form of the alien. Yeah. And totally intended. And even so, it's giant head, and then it has another phallus inside that enters.
It's all dicks.
It really is. Obviously, that was actually, you know, before you had even brought up the fact that the art design all points towards this this rape imagery. I had kind of even subconsciously noticed in the one scene when is it Lambert?
About the android?
No, the girl. The other girl, but that's
Lamborghini.
Yeah, I think it's
Lambert. That's it. Whenever she confronts the alien at the very end,
oh, and the tail,
and the tail reaches up under her legs.
Yeah,
And then you just see her face, like,
yeah, and
squint, and
cuts to a close up of her face in physical agony. And
yeah, I guess I think
that's one of the
it.
I think that's one of the most overt, the most obvious. Depictions of that
penetration,
the penetration imagery. Yeah.
Was
and it's very disturbing.
There's one moment that I thought, like, every time it's done with the alien, I think it's done. You know, the first time you watch it, it's like affecting you subconsciously. Now knowing it, we're looking for these things, like, oh, that's penetrative and that's phallic and stuff. But when the android, what was his name,
Ash.
Is like stuffing the rolled up magazine down Sigourney Weaver's mouth, I was like, of all the ways to kill someone, that is like one of the last ways.
Right?
Like, you're really going out of your way to get that imagery at that point. Because every other moment, like, if you're stabbing someone, okay, yes, that's penetrative, but then, you know, you combine it with that imagery, now it like draws on the sexual imagery. But that one, I was like, that is a bit of a stretch. And you're not the alien.
But I remember the first time seeing it, like, just that idea, I like gagged a little bit, and I was like,
yeah,
that
it makes you uncomfortable.
You physically uncomfortable, and I guess it all serves to that effect. It's just a barrage of trying to make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, I guess they don't go for the obvious kill, like, oh, the thing strangles you. It's going to penetrate you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. That's not as much of a vice anymore. Now that I think about it, I still think it's a bit of a stretch, but it does garner a different reaction.
Yeah.
So this film was just. You know, we've talked about kind of the deeper symbolism a little bit, but when people went and saw it in theaters in, was it 1979? They were going to see a sci-fi horror film. And how do you guys think it works just as a horror film? Is it effectively terrifying?
I think it's way more sci-fi than it is horror. I mean, I wasn't scared. I mean, I don't know. A horror film doesn't have to make you scared, because maybe you're just numb to all that stuff after a certain point.
I'll just say, I remember being pretty scared the first time I saw it.
I was too.
What age were you?
I was petrified.
I was probably 13 or so.
Okay.
14.
I mean, I was 23.
Okay.
And I was still like, I mean, I horror movies don't scare me.
Yeah.
I never am like, oh my God, I'm going to scream. But anxiety is what I judge a horror film on, and not knowing what moments to expect the first time I watched it, it really, I was feeling anxious the entire time, because there's so much darkness in the set design that you feel that at any moment they can turn a corner and the alien will be there.
Yeah.
Even though the alien only shows up maybe three times.
Yeah.
Maybe three times.
But the whole time you feel that looming threat. It's actually very similar to, I don't know if you guys have played Alien Isolation, the video game. I have it, and I'm moving so slow at it because I just have such a high stress level. I basically go from one save point to the next save point, and then I stop playing for the day.
I've played through Dead Space, which pulls a lot of influence from Alien, of course. And yeah, I can only play that game for maybe an hour at a time.
Yeah, it's
so
intense.
It takes forever to get through.
And I've only, in the actual game, I've encountered the alien maybe three times. But just knowing that it could get me at any time, I'm too terrified to really make progress.
And it's not scripted, right? It's randomly
generated.
So it feasibly could come out at any time.
Right.
Which is crazy.
I played for a little bit.
With me, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And this time around, this viewing of the movie, I was watching specifically for, you know, what they pulled from set designs with the air ducts and what they pulled
really
from,
close, right?
Yeah, and what they pulled, like, even when Dallas was, like, checking in to go see Mother, he, like, pulls out something, like, a data card that you save with in the game. I think that was really cool. But I feel like what sets the movie... what makes the movie so successful at making you uncomfortable, aside from the darkness of it, is the really well done and well thought out sound design. Mm. You know, like throughout that entire scene where the first guy gets the what's his name?
Kane.
Where Kane like is eating and everybody's happy and, you know, everyone's having a good time. There's still a heartbeat in the background that you might not notice at first, but and it doesn't accelerate, which I also noticed, but yeah, like this heartbeat grows louder and louder as you realize something's not right with Kane, and then, you know, the alien bursts out of his chest, and that's like the final moment that you hear that heartbeat. So yeah, that entire scene, you think everything's all hunky-dory and it's not.
So I think the soundtrack for this movie is not my favorite sci-fi or horror soundtrack. It's just kind of
atmospheric.
It's
ambience.
It's not really even atmospheric. It's orchestral. It's very composed. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, a lot of strings, a lot of horns and kind of stuff. And I said out loud at the very beginning of the movie, before even the crew wakes up, that it feels like it's trying to evoke whimsy more than suspense or horror.
Right.
But I do appreciate that it seems like that when Kane, when the alien bursts out of Kane's stomach, that the soundtrack has the decency to kind of die away and just let the horror of the moment unfold.
So do you guys know the thing behind that scene?
Are you talking about the surprise
where they
the
didn't
actors?
Know it?
Yeah. Yeah. In the script, it just kind of says, like, the alien emerges. And no one knows how. None of the actors or even a lot of the crew, just the people who did the special effects and Ash, know that it'll be coming out through his chest.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that so that he could include the real on-screen reactions from all the actors as it comes out. And I was paying attention, trying to focus on those reactions this time. And you'll notice that, like, you know, first there's that kind of big spurt of blood, and then it emerges.
And everyone
a
just
later.
Stops.
Yeah,
everyone
is like, yeah. Oh. It's like everyone is just like, what did we just see? But no one breaks character because they're all just genuinely surprised, which their characters should be. And then the thing emerges, and you get some screams, right, and like the blood shoots all over the place. And, you know, at some point in that, you know, they probably had to do a couple takes and they know what's happening, but I would not be surprised if as many of the reaction shots as possible were the first time reactions kept.
Oh, I bet.
Just like how what you were talking about on Captain Phillips a couple weeks ago.
Still. Oh yeah. when they was on the bridge. Yeah. Very method. I think they did something
they
similar in
been,
the thing.
Captain Phillips should have been the captain.
There should have been a behind the scenes where Sigourney Weaver's like, man, that was great. Welcome aboard to the alien.
I was thinking
nice
where.
Nice to meet you, alien.
I was thinking where Dallas is killed and Sigourney Weaver goes, or Ripley goes, I'm the captain now. Listen to me. And then they go on the, oh my gosh, in both movies, the bad guy and the leading good guy are on the lifeboat together. Think about it. The alien's on the shuttle after.
I was actually thinking, I was like, this is actually kind of similar to Captain Phillips in story structure.
Were you?
At one point I did think of Captain Phillips, actually.
Real quick, Steven, just for bringing that parallel, I'm going to only take away 1 point.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, James, -3.
You guys are tied.
Okay.
All right. High five, James.
Well, crap. Now I don't remember what I was going to say.
Sorry.
Captain Phillips parallels?
No.
Nope. We're done with that.
No, I was going to move on to something else.
Well, I have something if we're grasping. We were talking about how this is a great horror, and I said I wasn't very scared. And maybe it's because I've seen this before, and I'm in my mid-20s, and it takes a lot to scare me in a movie nowadays. But because I didn't see this movie for the first time until I was maybe 22. So I think, you know, 13, this movie would be absolutely horrifying.
Mm. I'm going to show this to my kids one day.
And I've seen enough of the other Alien films to where I was kind of wanting, like, oh, I want to see the alien in, like, all-out beast mode and not confined to a tube. But, I mean, that does build the suspense because if he's confined in a tube, if you're going after it, you're confined too. But I think it was missing. This movie's called Jaws in Space, and so you have to kind of compare it to Jaws. And in Jaws, while
it's actually called Alien,
it makes me never want to go in space again.
While both movies don't really show you the monster much, to kind of, you know, it's more scarier when you can't, scarier when you can't see it. In Jaws, they did some POVs from the shark, you know, that make you think, oh, the shark is really, it's like out. It's out to get you. It's hunting you. It's scoping you out. This movie, the alien kind of just appears in the room. Like, you know, for like a minute before it kills you, oh, hey, it's in the room. But I never got the sense that, oh, this alien is tracking you.
I feel that it adds to it, though, because this thing can be anywhere.
Yeah, but I don't... It can be anywhere, yes. And like, and that, with the climax of, oh, the alien is in the shuttle with Ripley, like, that is scary to me. But like, when the I don't know, it just, well, it seems like more like it, I guess it is anywhere if it just happens, but I don't know, that just didn't jump out at me.
So what do you think of Ridley Scott's admission that the story of Alien is actually just about the alien trying to find a good place to nap?
I believe
that really
it.
True?
really?
Minus two.
Oh,
right?
Man, you're waking me up.
Well, no, it almost seems like that because I never got the sense that it was like this horribly evil creature. It was more like, he's trying to reproduce.
He goes into the coolant room to just chill out, and then he's like, oh, you guys are in here too.
Get out.
Oh my God.
Well, the thing is, like, yeah, I can see what you mean, Steven, because like, if this thing were to, you know, they're making a lot of noise when they're doing planning, like the tentpole plot parts where they're just like, they're doing the planning. They're like, okay, here's what we need to do.
And it's just listening in the other room.
Like, yeah, exactly. You know that like, if the alien was hunting them, it would be attracted to the noise and it would be attracted to the lights, and they wouldn't stand a chance fighting it. But then that also wouldn't make a very interesting story, I guess. I was going to mention something about the believability of the story. Most of the time in horror, and maybe it's because this is part sci-fi, but most of the time in horror, somebody does something stupid that you're just like, why would you? Like, come on, don't do that. Yeah. But like in this movie, I feel like you're so, you know, you're foreign in this world and you don't know what people do or what a person would do logically on this ship, which kind of lends some believability to their actions with even if you don't know exactly what they're doing.
I actually totally agree. I never saw a decision be made where I'm like, well, that's just an obvious idiot thing to do that's going to get you killed. Like, even I think the stupidest thing done in the movie is Dallas going through the vents and kind of being isolated from everyone else because of course you're a target for attack, but he had a necessity to be in there. Right. And as an audience member in 2015, of course I can be like, oh, he's dead.
Well, actually I would put two instances in the not so believable pile. Before that, when they're like paired off into groups of two or groups of three, there's two groups of three, and the cat like springs past them and they're like, oh, you go get it, and then he like just wanders,
he sends him
off
alone
for a while and is like, hey, maybe we should all go together.
To be fair,
yes,
in their mind at that point the alien was
somewhere else.
This big.
Oh, yeah.
It was still a chestburster, which, like, I would look at that thing and I would just think, oh, I can just stomp on its head. Mm. It may not be even close to being right, but, like...
Mm. Okay. Well, the second one that I had was, and I mentioned it right before the podcast, the... God, I can't remember
jazz hands?
Anybody's name. No, not the jazz hands. Although the first time he gets Dallas, that is what the alien does. Like, yeah! I got you. Thanks. Let's see. Tom Skerritt was in this movie. Oh, yeah. Parker Dallas. And Lambert, when they go to, when they go, like, and everybody's getting ready to
get on the shuttle,
and they're like, okay, we got to go do this thing real quick. And Sigourney Weaver's like, yeah, I'll get the shuttle ready. What they go to do, I don't know exactly. Like, they go and get these canisters.
They're just
going to
throw cans around.
They're just going to throw cans around and make a bunch of noise and get killed by the alien.
I was thinking that too, because you know, Ripley has this plan. All right, we got to get on the shuttle. I will set the self-destruct and prep the shuttle. You guys get the coolant. Okay, good team. Break. They split up. They get killed. Parker and Lambert get killed while they're getting the coolant. Sigourney Weaver, Ripley, sorry, you know, escapes on the shuttle. I thought she needed the coolant for the shuttle, but they didn't return with the coolant. Ryan, you had a theory.
I think it's just that they, after two of their remaining crew dies, that they have less coolant needs to power the life support shuttle pods.
I can see that,
the life support pods.
Could be. Leave the cat behind then.
I picked up on two stupid decisions in this movie, but one is completely warranted, and it's, you know, throughout the first half of the movie, even though I remembered that this guy's the android, I'm thinking like, geez, Ash, like, number one rule of quarantine procedure, you don't let someone who's been, like, you know, in contact with a foreign alien body in your ship. And then he lets him in the ship. And there's so many moments where they just leave doors open. He doesn't care about wearing masks. He has no thought of like, oh, this thing could contaminate people. When, you know, even if you had like chicken pox, you'd be like, oh, you don't go in that room. That guy has chicken pox. Leave him away.
Well, one thing to think about.
He has a motive.
Ash has.
It's revealed later on in the movie, like, he has this ulterior motive from Mother, who I presume is standing in for the company. It's the computer.
I picture Mom from Futurama.
Yeah.
Yes. Bring the alien back, you bastards!
You know, the prime directive for him is bring the alien life form back. Everyone else doesn't matter. So he doesn't care if they get infected. He's going to leave every door open. He's going to watch it. He's going to actually start to impede their search for it for a little bit. So that stupid reason is completely justified and makes for a great, great twist in the movie. The other stupid reason, Lambert, I don't quite know what she contributed, because Parker, you know, once the alien starts going around, Parker wises up, you know, before he's kind of complaining like, they're not paying me enough for this. Are we going to get that bonus? But once there's an alien in the mix, he's like, all right, I'm going to build these flamethrowers and we're going to find this thing. I'll stand watch. And then, oh no, there's the alien. Lambert, get out of the way. Lambert, get out of the
Lambert,
way.
Lambert, move.
I got
like,
a shot.
Move a couple inches.
And she's just like,
Well, all right. To be fair, they're space truckers. They're not like action adventure heroes. Some people are not going to rise to the occasion.
It's just that I was just like,
We should make a show called Space Truckers.
Well, that bugged me because I wanted to see him shoot the alien with a flamethrower and see, oh, this thing's impervious to that. It's like near indestructible. I think that's why I never got quite so scared. Like, it's way more scary to me when, oh, I got a shot and, oh, he's dead, so bullets don't affect him. I'm referencing other movies, but you know, like, oh, my weapons have no effect on this guy, and not, oh, he got the jump on me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Steven, I'm only going to take away 1 point.
All right.
James,
this is like golf rules.
I don't know what rules.
James, due to your contributions, I'm only going to take away 1 point. And Ryan, due to your theory why they didn't need the coolant, I'm going to take away 0 points.
All right.
So we've talked about this as, I guess, in terms of horror and sci-fi and how it stacks up in the genre, but let's throw those out as a movie, just not keeping in mind any tropes, trying to keep in mind, you know, what had come before it being 1977 and what you haven't seen until after it. In movies, how do you guys feel about this one? I mean, it's obviously an all-time classic. It's going to hold up. But how do you guys feel about it just as a movie in the echelon of all movies?
You know, I was thinking about it while we were watching it. And in this movie, if you try to strip away the genre, you know, it's still stands as like an artwork almost. Just by looking at it, it's interesting and sort of pleasing to watch. I found that, like, even if it hadn't been classified as a horror or sci-fi, I think that it would have been enjoyable regardless. That being said, it's so strong in what it is, mm-hmm. That I think that's the whole reason that it stands up. And I think that, like, even today, like, I'm still impressed by all of the different things that came together and made the movie whole. Like I was saying, the set design and the sound work.
For sure.
Everything was expertly done, and I really appreciate it still.
Yeah. Ryan?
I can't think of anything really wrong with this movie, actually.
Other than that whimsy.
Other than the slight bit of whimsy.
I guess the soundtrack is not my favorite, but it doesn't...
strike you as wrong.
Yeah, it doesn't... It wouldn't have been my choice, I guess, but it's not a completely false start on their part.
Yeah.
When something is just so technically well done as this is, it just comes down to whether this movie is for me and whether I enjoyed it or not, which I did very much and still do years later and many viewings later. And I don't know if we're getting to ratings anytime soon, but I feel
we are getting there soon.
Okay.
Yeah. I had problems with it as a horror movie because I thought I could have done more to like get my suspense and stuff, but like when you take that away, I think this is a great movie. My one main complaint, if you take it away, is I think it drags a little in places because this is the movie where I see the alien kill people, and that doesn't even start to happen until halfway through the movie. But it's so visually like
captivating
that like it's entertaining the whole way through. I'm like, wow, look at the designs of the trucker ship. Was it called their Nostromo. Oh, yeah. Wow, look at that. And then like they land on the planet, and then look at the designs of the alien ship. They never really say what alien race it is, but the alien ship that isn't from Prometheus, apparently.
I do want to talk about that.
The scale on the planet is so cool.
Yeah, it's just like this whole time, it really, you know, puts you in this world and makes you think, yeah, this is like this flimsy garbage truck in space. It's just so... captivating might be just a hair too strong of a word, but it's close to captivating for me, the visual style. I love it.
Yeah. What did you want to go back to?
Prometheus and how Ridley Scott handled the release of Prometheus a few years ago, because everyone thought, oh, this is a prequel to Alien and we're going to see the actual setup to this classic film. But Ridley Scott got out in front of it and made sure that everybody knew that this wasn't a prequel. It was just another story in the universe.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the ship that crashes at the end of Prometheus is not the same ship as the one in Alien, even though there's no reason that it couldn't be you wanted to. And he really didn't want to make a movie. He didn't want to make another movie about the Xenomorphs because he had thought that alien character was played out, even though it's this widely loved and symbolic and iconic, amazingly designed horror character that everyone loves. And he just seems like he's purposefully trying to distance himself from that, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, I can kind of see why he might want to distance himself from that, because he only directed the first one, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, this is like such a great, well thought out film. Everything is very intentional in this film. And then you get Alien versus Predator Requiem. And then it's like, you tie it into like the franchise spin-off blockbuster trend of current Hollywood. I can see how he'd want to distance himself from that.
Well,
but
for me, it would be the opside, where he comes in and
bring
says,
it back,
brings right, it back to its glory.
This is how you do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
So I can understand that. But yeah, I mean, not to segue too much about Prometheus, but Prometheus has like something similar to a face hugger and a chest burster. And the thing that comes out at the end looks like the beginnings, like, you know, the alien, but maybe, you know, it needs to evolve into the alien.
You're so close. Like all the elements are there, but you just
don't want to call it.
It's like, if you wanted to distance yourself, why are you making everything the same, right? Basically?
Yeah.
I guess if you wanted it to be in the same universe, you could make something else up, but whatever.
I have another big thing I want to talk about that we haven't really covered yet.
Yeah.
Sigourney Weaver's performance and the Ripley character, which are even today still cited as one of the best and most powerful female characters in cinema.
Yeah.
36 years later,
say it, but part of the reason maybe is that it was written for a guy.
Is that right?
It was written for a guy, and then they ended up I think Ridley Scott made the call to change it to a female, and the fact that they didn't really change the part much to accommodate the female is pretty much just, hey, we have a badass person, happens to be played by a female. But
you know, that's not exactly the way to do it, to write female characters, or
write male characters for females.
Yeah. But it is kind of, you know, where we should be getting to, where it doesn't matter where a male or a female could play the same role. Mm-hmm. And I don't, we're still not even there today. And I don't, frankly, I don't think it's something that Hollywood films are even trying to do.
Well, I feel like this is the sort of movie that could get away with it too, like an action adventure sort of thing. You can, I feel like you could write a neutral character and it could either be male or female in the shoes of Ripley. But the but I feel like if you're doing like a psychological thriller or something like that, you would need to have somebody who like was set. No, I'm talking purely from a writing standpoint. I feel like you would need to at that point, if there's going to be a lot of dialogue, if there's going to be a lot of character interaction, because for the most part, this is just like, oh shit, what are we going to do? You know, it's not like, but Ripley, tell me about yourself. Where'd you grow up? You know, it's like, we don't have time for that right now. So I feel like it might be genre specific to be able to write a neutral character in that sense.
That sounded like J.K. Simmons was on the ship, and instead of talking to Miles Teller about drumming, so Ripley, tell me about yourself. And then he just like verbally abuses her like in Whiplash.
But yeah, I think that it's a certain, it takes a certain movie to get away with that, with a director being able to call that shot and say, hey, you know, why don't we just have a female lead? I think it was a good call because I think it made it something totally unique.
I think it makes the film stand out more, you know, in history. If it was just another guy, people would be like, oh, it's just a kind of another sort of sci-fi movie, just guys in the lead. Starting off the movie, I didn't really think Ripley is the lead. But then as the movie progresses and more people start dying off and she takes more charge,
she's not the captain.
She becomes the lead, yeah.
Yeah, she's the second in command.
Yeah, no, it starts off, she's one of the crew. And then, you know, but she has the bright ideas of, you know, don't let that guy on the ship and stuff. So she's always right. But then finally you get to see her take charge at the end with a pretty solid plan of, all right, we got to get rid of this thing. You get on the shuttle and we'll self-destruct the ship.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, whenever the sleeping pods open up, the first person we see get up is Kane. Mm. Who I believe at the time, I don't know the actor's name. If you still have that pulled up,
John Hurt.
It's like a pretty famous actor back in the 70s. I want to say
still is. He actually just played Doctor Who in Day of the Doctor.
Nice.
Oh,
he was the other Doctor, like the alternative timeline one or whatever it was.
Really?
Yeah.
But you know, it was kind of the this is a terrible example, but the second G.I. Joe movie when you know, Channing Tatum's character dies off like in the first 10 minutes after they had advertised him, like every trailer and every poster leading up to that movie's release has him like front and center next to The Rock, even though The Rock is actually the main character. So it's a similar sort of bait and switch with this movie,
right,
where everyone thought that, oh, we're gonna go see John Hurt, you know, in this movie, and then he gets killed off within the first 30 minutes. Yeah.
I was wondering that too, you know, like when they first wake up, I was like, is it going to be, who's it going to be? Because I remember it not being Sigourney Weaver. I was like, is it going to be like Dallas or
actually,
somebody? Because he's kind of like, I could see him also maybe being the main character at the beginning because he's the cool captain that everybody likes.
I don't even think you can see Sigourney Weaver's pod in that opening scene because there's four visible and two on the backside, and I think it's the four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's Kane,
any other movie?
It's Parker. It's Ash, and I think it's Dallas.
Yeah, and any other movie you would have.
So both
you would have had had the protagonist wake up.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that. It kind of, she falls into that main character role out of circumstance, and by, Ash even says to her, we're interested in this species because it's a survivor. It isn't governed by a moral compass, like talking about the xenomorph, but then Ripley proves to be the survivor, and she's the one who comes out on top at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of, she did have a moral compass, and that she seemed like she wasn't like corrupted or evil or anything. But I mean, she was very much like, okay, we need to stay isolated because this guy's sick. Like, she was very much the one who was the survivor.
Every time something, yeah, happened that threatened any of the crew, she was like, wait, hold on, I got something to say about this. And everybody else would be like, eh, well, you know, Ripley, whatever. We're cool. And then they die.
Yeah. So.
What does that tell you? Always listen to Sigourney Weaver.
She in her jumpsuits.
Is that a thing?
I don't know. Isn't Ripley always, I mean, just in the crew, they're always wearing jumpsuits.
Yeah.
Respect the jumpsuit.
I guess that's true.
Ryan, for not even reacting to the jumpsuit thing at all and looking at me like I'm stupid, I'm going to take away a point.
You know, that's fair. Is it time to rate now?
Sounds like it.
Let's do it.
Cool.
Who would like to start? Steven, as somebody who has been half derocked, or...
Well, he's holding the camera right now. Oh, okay. He's pointing it right at me. So,
so I'm Ryan?
I'm just going to go ahead. Yeah, I pretty much said everything that I wanted to earlier about how there's nothing really wrong with this movie. Mm. And I just love watching it so much. With that, I think I'm just going to give it an A.
Juby?
Oh. To me.
By the way, any name we say that starts with a J means James.
Oh, I had imagined so, yes.
Jamichael.
Just Street Stephen Ryan.
It's been a while since I've watched this movie, but it's always a lot of fun. And like I said, or like Stephen said, always visually captivating and yeah, just a blast. I love sci-fi and I love horror, and this one I feel like is the perfect marrying of those two. So I'm going to also give it an A.
All right. It's my favorite movie of all time. I'm not going to say that much more. It's my favorite for a reason. I give it an A+.
It's a solid movie. I did still have those qualms about the pacing, even though the visual makes up for it there. I did think about the pacing and it didn't quite jump out at me in a scary way. I'm hovering between a B+ and an A-, but I'm optimistic. I'm going to give this film an A-.
All right, well.
A.
That's an A.
Minus for aliens, minus the rest of the crew.
Well,
but it's an A.
You could have just said that we averaged an A for aliens.
Yeah. So. Much easier.
We got an A.
Congrats,
Alien.
You did it.
Now that you have our stamp of approval, you can go down in history as one of the greats.
I used to work as an intern at Ridley Scott's company. I could go down and give him the great news.
I'm sure he'll
Ridley,
care.
Baby. Great news.
I got to hang out in his office once or twice, and I was like, and I think he has a xenomorph in there. I was like, oh man.
Could you imagine working like and just turning around? Ah, Jesus Christ, we need to move that somewhere else.
It was like a desk figure, it wasn't Steven, like a full scale.
Oh, okay.
Just for your connection with Ridley Scott, I'm gonna take away 0 points.
All right. What does that leave us at?
You guys want to run down before we head to the
hopefully, let's do it. Before we head to the
wait, let's give the rundown first.
Okay.
With -5 points, we have Ryan. With -4 points, we have James. And with -4 points, we have Steven.
All right.
Challenge, 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 sex.
Oh,
Michael, what's our challenge?
Okay. Yeah. All right, guys, you are all the Kane of a separate cruise, and you all are reporting back to the mothership. What you're finding in real time as you are exploring a new planet.
Okay. I thought they didn't get any reception at that point.
Well, to the rest of his landing crew.
Yeah, yeah.
There was reception. Just not the way
you know what? You'll just be speaking into like a Home Alone style tape recorder, and you can give it to them later when you get back.
I'll go first, and I wish I could give you a point because I have the talk boy or whatever that thing was.
I did too. -0 points, Steven.
Um, I still have a tape recorder by my bed, guys, here in LA. So, all right, I'm just going to go right into it. All right. Now it's any planet we want. It doesn't have to be like he's descended. Begun. Okay.
Any planet you want.
All right. All right. The ground is a rusty copper. The terrain is very rocky. Looks very barren. I'm not quite sure where this life signal is from.
What does the ground taste like?
My space helmet's kind of getting in the way here. I would venture it tastes a little like glass.
I would assume coppery, but you know.
I'll let you know. Let me scoop some up here. Get a sample. All right.
You're scooping up a sample now?
Yes, for analysis later.
Sorry, you went dark there for a second. I didn't know what you were doing. So.
Oh, okay. All right, I'm back. That was my reception. Is it good? Yes?
Yep, loud and clear.
All right. Oh, wait. There's movement. Okay, I'm going to investigate. Gravity is a little heavier on this planet, so... All right, I'm there. All right. I see tiny little... They look like children, like tiny lizard fish children. They're so cute. Oh, I think they're... Oh, no. Oh, no, one of them's hurt. Oh, no, they're going to help out the other one. And now they're eating them. Ah! Sigourney Weaver, save me.
Are they going to eat you?
Not if they beam me back to the ship
god.
In time.
Oh, my God.
All right. I have now been beamed back to the ship after an altercation with a rock monster. And here's the sample I got.
I'd like to go next, by the way.
Did you get turned inside out?
I forget if that happens or not. And it sort of does.
No, you don't.
I don't. That thing over there did, though. The test thing did. Good job on doing the test thing, Ryan. You're a good transporter helmsman.
All right, Steven.
I'd like to point out Sigourney Weaver's in both of these movies, so there's a link.
No, we know. It was Galaxy Quest. It was pretty quick. I like the premise. I'm going to take away 2 points for it.
All right.
Performance, you got to commit harder to, like, I don't believe that you're witnessing children being eaten in front of you, even if they're lizard fish children, when you're just going,
oh, so, no.
That's fair.
So I'm going to take away 3 points for that.
Okay.
So how many points did that take away?
Five total.
Negative five. So you're at negative 9 points.
All right.
All right. I'd like to go next. Oh, God. Put on the suit. Oh, God, I'm hungover. All right, get this shit on. Here we go. Going outside. Oh, command?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Okay, I can read you.
Yes.
Roger.
Steven.
Cool. So I'm outside here. Let's see. There's a weird formation. I'm not really sure how to describe it.
Is your camera on?
Yeah, hold on. Sorry, it's... There you go. As you can see, it's quite... The ground is squishy, and there's mist everywhere, and it seems to go... What is that?
What's the atmosphere made of?
Shut up. Oh, my God! It's a Minok! Quick, get back in the ship! This is no cave! Gotta get out of here! The cave! It's closing! This is no cave! What? Big worm! It really will not work on the you really need the visual for that, I guess.
My favorite part about that is that I said in real time, and that just sped by. That being said, I got a very good laugh out of that.
Yes.
You're stupid as hell. I'm going to take away 4 points for the whole thing.
Awesome. I'll go ahead.
All right, and, I'm last up then.
All right, Ryan. Can you read us?
Yeah, loud and clear. Go ahead and lower me down.
All right.
Over. Man, oh, this is... I'm still lowering. I'm still being lowered.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Are you good?
You gotta really get me down there.
I think that's as far as it'll go.
All right, Wash, keep it steady.
Okay. This is harder than it looks.
This is the craziest job we've ever done. What, I'm dropping down on top of this train now or something?
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Wait, but
I mean, after it happened, I will remember it.
I should hope so, Wash.
All right, I'm keeping it steady.
Kaylee,
hurry up and get it done.
Kaylee, give me some more slack on the line here.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
I said Kaylee, not Inara.
Sorry.
Get back to your
shuttle.
Get back to your shuttle.
Ways.
You whore. it's real windy down here.
I know. I can hear it over the mic.
You can still hear me though, right?
Yeah, kind of.
All right, I gotta get my bolt cutters open.
I'm really concentrating.
I'm prying the hatch open on top.
Yeah, be careful.
All right, I got the hatch. Oh God, there's Alliance down here. Oh, they're shot me. Oh, they shot me.
Do you need me to move? Do you need me to lower you further in?
No, get me out of here.
Oh, okay.
I keep coming up. It's a long way up.
Okay.
Keep it coming.
You're not shot, are you?
I'm very shot. Okay. Very shot.
Wait, did you still need me?
Did you leave
me?
Kaylee on the...
Kaylee, keep bringing me up. What are you doing?
Wait, is Kaylee on the train or not?
No, Kaylee's on the rig. She's pulling me up.
I'm down here, idiot.
Okay. All right, well, I guess we should leave then.
I'll just stay here.
Doctor, give me something to... Give me something to quiet this pain.
I just want to let you know, no matter what you do to me or my sister, as long as you are on this table, you are my patient. I won't harm you.
You're such a dork.
Okay, so we've basically got Galaxy Quest versus Star Wars versus Firefly.
Yeah,
that's a tough one.
But also performance matters. Ryan, for that, I'm going to give you -1 point.
Okay, that's fair.
Which brings our totals to Steven, -9.
Woo, woo!
James, -8. Ryan, -6. But
yes.
James is second place, and he gets to pick, because Ryan, you've already picked in this cycle.
Damn it. I didn't win. I won by default.
Hey, but, you know, that's how it works here. I'm from under a rock.
Yes, it is.
Everybody is a winner eventually.
Okay. Let's see. My pick.
Your favorite movie.
Favorite
of
movie.
All time.
Jeez, that's a tough one. I'm going to have to go with Shaun of the Dead.
Cool.
It was a toss-up between a couple of different ones because we've seen most of my favorite movies by now. Jurassic Park, Casablanca.
Okay.
So we're going to watch Shaun of the Dead. I know that's not exactly a cinema piece, but it's one of those movies that I can watch.
No, it's a
I think people like
great
it all,
tons
right?
of Oh yeah, I mean I agree, but like I usually get funny looks when I say Shaun of the Dead just because people are like, "Oh, why not Chinatown?" And it's like, I don't know, because I don't watch Chinatown as much as I watch Shaun of the Dead. So that's what we're going to be watching. Do your homework and check it out, especially if you're a fan of Edgar Wright and haven't seen his premiere.
How do you become a fan of Edgar Wright without having seen it?
I know people who
you know
like,
people that
yeah,
are like
I'm like, well, oh, I love Scott Pilgrim versus
yeah, a lot
the World
of people
or,
Scott
you know,
okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
All right, James.
That's a good one.
Yeah, write us and watch Shaun of the Dead. Write us in, fuarock@gmail.com. Tweet us at fuarockpodcast, right on the Hyperdrive or from under Rock Facebook pages.
Mm-hmm.
And
we now have 3 separate from under a rock Instagrams.
What?
Really?
No.
Oh. We'll concise all this. James, do you have a question that our audience should answer about this movie for next week?
Not yet.
All right. Well, why don't we address last week's questions?
Oh yeah, sure.
So last week when we asked about Alien, I'm going to say this really roundabout. Last week we asked you, this film has a lot of sexual and rape imagery. We talked about it in our discussion. We wanted to know what movies you think uses similar imagery and uses it well. And Ryan Radley Lawley, you had an amazing post. You gave us a lot of suggestions. These might become future picks because These are really good. You said First Nightmare on Elm Street for sexual imagery, American Beauty for voyeurism, and more on the nose example of the use of sexual ideas making the audience uncomfortable is in the film by Philip Seymour Hoffman, Happiness. I haven't seen most of those. And then you went on to explain Happiness is less suggestive. The plot deals with characters who are challenged by their sexuality, not in a question of sexuality, more trying to live life in pursuit of happiness when their release comes from morally abhorrent behavior. Fascinating but incredibly uncomfortable film. I haven't seen it. I might have checked it out at some point.
Either. Yeah, it's interesting.
I have not either.
No, James?
I have not.
That is an amazing suggestion, Ryan. Thank you for writing
it.
Maybe
if we do another audience pick,
yeah,
one that we all haven't seen, that'll be up there. We can do that.
Although it's apparently going to make us very uncomfortable, so we might hate you by the end of this, Ryan. But right now, we love you. Thanks for writing in. All right, James, how about that question?
Okay, so the question is, Edgar Wright, in his movies, plays a lot with editing and camera work to bring the most out of his comedy, and in some cases, be a joke within the camera work. So I want you guys to submit a favorite gag or a favorite bit that makes use of perspective or makes use of a whip pan or something that you can do purely with a camera. So write us in.
I like it.
Let us know what you think. It can be from other Edgar Wright movies, or it can be from something completely separate. So it's totally up to you.
You know, the only two types of movies there are: Edgar Wright films and
everything else. I'm just saying, I'm giving you a freebie if you say, oh man, Scott Pilgrim did this one awesome thing. It's like, yeah, but there are other things, obviously, that you can pull from.
All right, and then can I throw in a bonus question because Edgar Wright? Bonus points to whoever can tell me the... what Power Ranger villain is in an Edgar Wright film?
All right.
It's not the refrigerator, is it?
Oh, it is.
Write us in, check out our
all our socials.
Facebook.
Kate Blanchett.
Et cetera, et cetera.
If you haven't heard our Alien podcast, give that one a listen.
This one that we're...
Yeah.
Just start it over. Yeah. You know what? While you're at it...
If you came in partway through...
All right, well, I guess that's going to do it for this week's episode. Let's go around the table for one last roll call.
I'm Steven Zarita.
I'm Mike Bourbon Ornelas.
I'm James McAnally, James McDoodles.
And I'm Ryan Evans. Thank you once again for joining us for another episode of
From Under a Rock.
Slow fade.
Can I really quickly, maybe you can add this in after we forgot the iTunes subscribe and rate, just like as a post.
Or maybe this.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Let's just keep this in our tag out.
That counts.
Hey,
you just did it.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Nope,
to our,
too late.
You literally already
subscribe
did
to us on iTunes and rate us.
I'm going to cut out that part.